Hi, everyone, and welcome to Tracks Through Time. I'm your host for End Freight Waves, Deputy Editor Brielle Daigle, and I'm here to tell you about some of the most interesting stories throughout history in transportation and freight. Today, I'm here with Thomas Wasson, who is our resident trucking expert here and fellow Freight Waves TV host. Hi, Thomas.
Good to see you, Brielle. We got the background today. I'm in studio, so I wanted to class it up instead of my kitchen table.
Gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous. I love it. I love the chair. Well, today we are celebrating the anniversary of the beginning of the Panama Canal, construction actually, in 1904. So the Panama Canal is one of the engineering marvels of the modern world. Of course, it connects the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans, reducing the time travels for ships by thousands of miles. But this feat of engineering did not happen overnight. It was the result of years of planning, hard work, and perseverance. And so today we're going to take you on a journey through the history of the construction of the Panama Canal. So Thomas, first I want to ask you how much you know about this kind of background for the beginning of the construction.
I know a little bit about it. Reminds me of my old American history. Part of me feels like throwing out Monroe Doctrine, buzzwords, and commerce, but it's fascinating to see how important it was. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I think we had ownership of it, and eventually we gave it back decades later after we assisted with the construction of it.
Yes, absolutely. That is totally true. But it actually has kind of a darker side of history. It ended up being really, really dangerous problem. Really dangerous project. So first, I just want to thank our sources. So we got a lot of research from the History Channel, the Authority of the Panama Canal itself, and the Library of Congress for background research on this episode. So let me just get into it. Basically, the idea of building a canal through the Isthmus of Panama dates back to the early 16th century when Spanish conquistador Vasco Nunez de Balboa first crossed the Isthmus, which is just another word for a strip of land. So he realized that Panama was really the only thing separating a route between these two major oceans without being able to go through Panama. Ships had to sail completely around South Africa to get to the other side. So if you were interested in going from California to Florida, which seems like you can just go through the Gulf or it would be like a quick journey, you ended up having to go around all of South America. So since then, numerous countries tried to create an outpost there through the years. However, it wasn't until the 19th century that serious discussions about building a canal actually began. In the late 1800s, France decided to try with a campaign led by French engineer Ferdinand de Lesseps, who had successfully constructed the Suez Canal, which you can read about on FreightWaves Classics. We recently covered him. Now, Thomas, I don't know if you're a Bravo fan, but I sure am. And I know we have some Bravo fans here at FreightWaves and some listeners as well. But for fellow Bravo reality TV fans, if the name De Lesseps rings a bell, this is indeed the ancestor to the ex-husband of Countess Luann, where she got her countess from the Real Housewives of New York. But I digress.
That's amazing.
I love it. So Ferdinand de Lesseps' project saw a lot of back and forth early on over how construction should actually be done. And then this all ended when de Lesseps made an empowering speech before a committee detailing the quote-unquote need for a canal that went straight through the land rather than a lock system. He was very, very adamant on going straight through Panama versus a new a system of locks and tunnels that went through. And construction began in 1881 after everyone agreed to his sea level plan. And I want to take the time here to emphasize that this was the jungle. And not only was it the jungle, it's a jungle on top of two tectonic plates. So while De Lesseps had a lot of experience created the Suez Canal, the soft sand of Egypt was not the same as this. This is a completely different ball game, and this would end up being much more than he can handle. So the French construction team was faced with a lot of difficulties, including landslides and frequent flooding. The working conditions were really harsh, and the workers were plagued with diseases like malaria and yellow fever. One engineer died with what they called brain fever, which was probably yellow fever, followed a few days later by another man who was a high-up official. And this was all in the early planning stages before the full crew even arrived. So months later, when the full construction crew of 10,000 workers joined in, so many deaths followed. On top of really difficult construction, when they eventually got into trouble, De Lesseps relented, and he did decide to go with the locks idea that so many people had told him to do before. So he tried to hire Gustave Eiffel. Yes, Gustave Eiffel of the Eiffel Tower fame. To help salvage the project. But at this point, the project was in way too much debt. And in 1888, the project was fully bankrupt, and the French had to abandon the project by 1889. And through the French time on the project, more than 20,000 people had died. When I first read this stat, I had to double check and triple check my sources because I just didn't think that was possible. But because of the malaria, the yellow fever, and all of the accidents, yes, an actual 20,000 people died. And if you're just joining us, I want to let you know we are talking about the construction of the Panama Canal. So after the French abandoned it, eventually the U.S. took over construction. And at the time, Panama was under control of Colombia, and the United States was tasked with working that out with Colombia. But instead, they created a task force, kind of, and they helped support Panama in its declaration of independence. And then between the U.S. and Panama, they created a treaty that allowed the U.S. complete territory over the location of the canal for $10 million. Eventually, that would kind of cause a little bit of tension between the two countries. But at the time, it's what was able to make the canal possible. And in 1904, the commencement ceremony for the construction was held 119 years ago today on May 4th. And now I just have to say, May the 4th be with you. Under the leadership of U.S. President Teddy Roosevelt, the construction project was eventually completed in 1914, 10 years after it began. This construction was a monumental achievement, but again, it came at a cost. Workers lost their lives during construction, reaching the hundreds in the very first year. One anecdote says that the chief engineer, John Finley Wallace, became so downtrodden and upset about the situation of mostly of yellow fever, that he even ordered a metal coffin, saying for his trip home, so convinced he would not make it home alive. But by June 1905, three quarters of the original American workers just up and left, including Wallace, who did not end up having to use his metal coffin because he threw in the towel before he saw any accident. And now Wallace was replaced by another man, John F. Stevens, who ended up being a lock expert, which is the way the U.S. decided to construct the Panama Canal this time around instead of going straight through. Stevens also focused on Chief Sanitary Officer William Crawford Gorgas. And Gorgas himself was a fellow yellow fever survivor. And he was also a doctor who studied how mosquitoes played a part in the spread of diseases. And while the popular conception was that trash and bacteria in the soil were the cause of yellow fever, or what they called bad air back then, Gorgas actually knew better. He knew that it was the mosquitoes. He started a campaign to fumigate homes, drain pools of water, and enforce in attaching screens to windows. They sprayed crude oil mixed with kerosene in water sources and puddles to smother the larvae. And yellow fever cases in the area were actually almost gone by the end of 1905. However, malaria did stick around. There was a slight drop in cases, but unfortunately, they weren't able to eradicate malaria. And 80% of the workers were hospitalized at some point during 1906 for malaria. But still, it's really a big, big feat for Gorgas. He likely saved tens of thousands of lives. So accidents, again, were also abound throughout the construction, especially what's known as the Culebra Cut, which is an 8-mile stretch of mountains that workers had to cut a 45 deep and at least 300 feet wide ditch. And dynamite would often explode early due to the climate. And one incident in December killed 23 men while excavating machines accidentally detonated some dynamite. There was often flooding and avalanches as well. And at the end of the U.S. construction, 5,855 canal workers' deaths were recorded, most of which were actually African-American. Nevertheless, the Panama Canal was completed in 1913, and it transformed global trade, allowing ships to avoid the long and dangerous journey around the southern tip of South America. It takes about approximately 8 to 10 hours to get through the entire canal from end to end. And the very first thing to travel through the canal was a crane that was actually a part of the construction equipment that built the canal. Boats lift up to 80 feet high to travel through, and then they travel through that system of locks we talked about. And in, like you said, Thomas, in 1999, the United States returned control of the canal over to Panama during President Carter's term in the White House. Today, the Panama Canal remains a vital trade route, and it continues to be expanded and modernized to accommodate larger ships. The construction of the Panama Canal was really a testament to human ingenuity and determination, and it's a remarkable feat of engineering that changed the course of history. And I do want to take a time out to remember those who died while making such an important part of trade. This is a really important piece of and it's not as well known how many people did die during the creation of this canal. But I think it's really important. So, Thomas, have you ever been to Panama or the Panama Canal?
I have not, but I think it would be something cool to check out. It's such an interesting thought to know that the entire country of Panama is basically bisected by a canal. Like, my curious thought is, do you have a bunch of bridges? What happens? You know, I hope they have some crossing points for folks, because it reminds me of like the Isthmus of Corinth. The Romans built a large canal. I think the Greeks attempted to, and the Romans finished it. And it's such a crazy thought when you're looking at how, even back in the day, movement of ships is so important, because they didn't want to sail around the whole bottom part of Greece. They just want to cut right through it.
Exactly. Yeah. These canals are such an important part of trade and kind of just the creation of civilizations in general, or the building upon of that. And the Panama Canal is known as one of the seven wonders of the modern world. So it's pretty cool. That lock system is pretty ingenious. And Stevens, both the engineers, the chief engineers, were really crucial in kind of creating that that system for its construction. Once it was turned over to the second guy, he kind of created this idea of splitting the project into three parts. So he really focused on the three sections of the locks. People still died, but it was a big movement forward, and it actually was completed, unlike so many others who had tried before.
Well, I think it's interesting just the technology as well. The aspect, as you can see, it began in the late 1800s, and then finally by the early 1900s, they found out a lot along the way. I forgot about yellow fever. That's one of those great points you brought up, that is staggering how many people, if you just showed up, you're bound to get yellow fever. It was just a matter of like when, not if.
I know. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's why I love that guy bought a coffin for himself, because he was so sure that he wasn't going to make the end of construction.
Exactly. I mean, it's like, at least it's light. The metal coffin's a great idea as well. I don't need that wood or oak to deal with. I liked your comments on the dynamite. You forget back in the day, you can read stories of folks in like the 1800s, and they're like, don't shake the glycerin, don't shake the box, because sometimes it would just go, you know, it'd explode. It'd be such a horrible thing. I had no idea they cut through a mountain. It's a little intense.
Well, that's what the problem was so much, is that it's literally going through mountain ranges. And this is why the French had such a problem, because they were like, oh, no, we're going to just cut through and connect it on two sides. And it proved to be so much harder than they really thought. And he really, De Lesseps fought very, very hard to do it that way, when other people were coming to him and saying, you know, look at these plans, we need a lock system in place. But he was sure, because of the invention of steam and steam engines and the railroad that was there, that they didn't have to use mules and other outdated forms of technology, that they would really be able to do this. And it ended up costing lives, millions of dollars. I think the U.S. alone, who was successful in it, I think it cost them a total of $40 million, and they didn't see a return on it for decades.
I think it's such a, like, the lack of return as well. To me, also, is a really amazing thing for American power projection. You think, as the U.S., we have, you know, the Pacific and the Atlantic coasts, and our ports are oftentimes pretty far apart. So having that canal to cut through it, it makes sense why the French would eventually give up. They're probably like, well, I don't really need this if I'm going to keep funding it. But you get Teddy Roosevelt, early American forms of expansion. You know, we talked about it's completed by like 1913. I think in the early 1900s, the U.S. fleet went on an entire global tour, because at the time, the U.S. was not really considered as, you know, today we are one of the preeminent naval powers. But at the time, we were just another of nations competing. So I can only imagine, from a point of pride in that American culture in the early 1900s, it was something to where, in spite of all these setbacks, we got to finish it, not only for our own force projections, but also to kind of have our claim to fame. You know, this is right before World War I as well. So you get a lot of great power competition. Everybody wants to have their little bit of prestige and projects to show off.
You hit the nail on the head. The U.S. was kind of beginning its little glow up of becoming, you know, an important part. We were seeing a lot of excess money and things like that. And so Teddy Roosevelt was like, this is for us. And he went for it, and we did it.
It's so fascinating, because I think a lot of people forget that waterways have been historically and continue to be an integral part of the United States. You know, some even historians have argued that the fact that we have the Mississippi River, the Ohio River systems, the Tennessee, as well as these various river systems, really allowed Americans to industrialize at a rapid scale, just because we could float it down. You forget about the Tom Sawyer, you know, Mark Twain frequently wrote about it in the mid-1800s. You would just float down the river, and having river commerce was an integral part to early American story. So it's super, super fascinating to talk about the Panama Canal, because it's almost like this linchpin of Americans, you know, not only working towards national security, but a commercial interest and showing off our power projection. And, you know, folks forget that we, you know, even if things like in World War I and World War II, we were very lucky because we are separated by two oceans. We're primarily a maritime force that happens to begrudgingly have to project other ways.
Yeah, it's really amazing the importance and of waterways, and the importance and kind of how it can help us, you know, with trade and you know, security and things like that, but how it also kind of hinders that. And so I like the Panama Canal because it's a combination of the two of those things.
And just imagine with our current, like, previous supply chain issues, a lot of stuff came from China to the West Coast. But, you know, without that canal, we would have not been able to efficiently reroute flows of goods from two different types of oceans. It's similar to how the Suez Canal was such a game changer. You didn't have to sail around the Cape, the Horn of Africa. You could simply go over through the Mediterranean to Egypt, which was a huge game changer as well. But you forget on how important it is to just find a spot and just dig a large trench so you can fit ships through.
Right. I completely agree. Well, that is all the time we have for today. So I do just want to close out with our actual fun fact of the day. Last episode was kind of depressing, so I wanted to make this a little more fun, and it is related to the Panama Canal. So did you know that the wife of a construction worker on the Panama Canal project was informed that her husband was declared dead during his time working on the construction? But a few weeks later, he appeared at the family's home's front door. Ella Louise Ray fainted when she saw the ghost of her husband, Edward Ray, when she found out from a telegram that he had died, but then his ghost was standing right in front of her. Well, it turns out he wasn't a ghost at all. Edward was actually robbed by a thief while he was in Panama. And that thief died shortly after with Edward's belongings on him. So the man was incorrectly identified as Edward Ray by police, who had no clue that this even happened. And he came home excited to see his family after 4 years of working on the canal. And then he was shocked to find out that he had died. And then also in the 1920s, a dude actually swam through the canal.
The whole way. So he basically, how long did it take him? They take a break?
I have to look into this story more. I kind of just found it really quickly before we started, but I think it was definitely a publicity stunt. And I think it cost him 66 cents to travel through because, you know, you're charged by tonnage and it was just his body.
Yeah, he didn't have a big breakfast that day, I'm assuming, you know. And it reminds me of back in the day, you know, getting robbed and stuff. There was an entire, in the late 1800s and early 1900s, very intricate ways people would be bamboozled. Because at the time, like you said, you couldn't really figure out if this person is who they say they were. So a very popular one in New York and other places was people would claim to be helping build like the Eiffel Tower or something else, and they have fake documents, and then they'd make you give money for it. But the problem was, if it turned out you got duped into it, a lot of the folks were successful getting away with it because you didn't want to be known at the time as the person who had such poor judgment that you gave them money in the first place. So there's this whole racketeering where people would take advantage of the fact that, you know, your street cred at the time was very, very important in terms of your business dealings, not like now with Twitter and whatnot. And so people would just be so embarrassed that they just wouldn't report it.
Yeah, I'm so excited that you said this, because I actually want to do a episode on like where on hey, I got a bridge to sell you, you know, that phrase. Because that's where that came from. People were immigrants coming to the United States, and they were so excited to, you know, be a part of, you know, the land of dreams. And grifters would come up to them and say, would you like to own the Brooklyn Bridge? And people would buy it. And yeah, they would spend all of their life savings on a bridge that wasn't actually theirs. And then would be too embarrassed to enforce it.
See, that's amazing. I'll have to find out the person who it was. It was part of this book I was reading, talking about how things to watch out for. You know, and well, there was one in Europe. They claimed to be nobility, and so they would go from like Paris to London and other places, and they would basically either perform or talk or do something. And the reason you'd see a lot of these traveling folks keep moving from city to city is when people caught on to it, then it was time they got run out of town. You had to go to the next town, and you could get away with showing up in random towns before eventually, you know, enough folks realized it and word got out ahead of you that you were selling the bridge to, you know, parts of the Eiffel Tower, parts of the Brooklyn Bridge. But before that technology, I think even in the 1940s, there's a Ken Burns documentary. A guy got in World War II, he was in the Philippines and he was a prisoner of war. Well, the government by 1943 was like, bro, we don't know if he's still there, so we're just going to send you the telegram. And it turns out he made it. So he came back home 2 or 3 years later and his wife's like, oh, you made it. It's like, yeah, it turns out I did make it. It was another guy. They got me mixed up.
Yeah, I love those stories. Obviously, I love history. And back in the day, you really could be quite anonymous versus now, where it's very, very difficult to do that. But thank you so much, Thomas. This was a really, really fun discussion. I'm really excited to be able to share the ins and outs of the Panama Canal construction. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in. You can follow me on Twitter at @JGobrielle to see what else we have going on here at FreightWaves Classics. You can also email me at bjakel@freightwaves.com. And tune in 2 weeks for our next episode on May 18th, which is actually my birthday, on FreightWaves TV, or listen to this show wherever you get your podcasts.